Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM Channel 206, or the brand new Odyssey app. We're here until 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. Always going to have a fun time, and we'd love to hear from you on the phones. 855-212-4CBS. That's the number to get on in. That's 855-212-4227. Or you could get at me on the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb, Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B, or on our network's account, at CBS Sports Radio. Ryan Trace Hickey riding shotgun with me, and as always, we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Gary Parrish from CBS is going to join us coming up an hour from now as we'll recap the college basketball season, recap the national championship game from last night. Now, whenever you have a national championship game that doesn't live up to the hype, I always feel a little bit weird, and it's always a little bizarre to me when you say the game was a dud, because I would think, if let's just say I'm a Baylor Bears fan, that game to me wasn't a dud last night. Today I'm waking up, if you even slept like a fat kid in a candy store, and you're on cloud nine. So the Baylor Bears fan will never look at that game as something that didn't live up to the hype, didn't live up to the moment, or it was a dud, as some people like to call it. So I like to be careful in those situations. Clearly, if you're a Gonzaga fan, you only lost one game this year, but the important thing was it was the final game of the year. You know, I lived that being a Patriot fan. They were 18-0. I had great memories all throughout that season. It was maybe the most fun you ever had watching a team in an individual season because they were blowing out the competition left and right. And that's what Gonzaga was doing through 31 games. They only had two games which were under 10 points that they won, but everything else was over 10, and 15 of those games were at least by 20 points. So you're going to try to justify it through time, but you're really just in a state of denial because no way that you look at it, no matter how you try to justify it, Gonzaga's season is now a disappointment. I know you people are going to say, oh, how can you say that? What did we say 3-4 weeks ago going into this NCAA tournament? With the draw that they got, being the number one overall seed, having the easiest path to the championship game, not really having any competition along the way. And I know UCLA was great, so let's not look over UCLA. But if they would have lost to UCLA, even with how classic of a game that was, it would have been embarrassing. When you had a team that was 30-0 before that UCLA game, and you had to win it overtime. Yes, it was an all-time great moment. It was a great shot. And I wonder now how we'll look back at that shot in history, because isn't it funny? Yesterday, we're talking about that shot being one of the greatest shots of all time. I still think in the history of the NCAA tournament, the most important shot is Chris Jenkins. And to me, that's the greatest shot of all time in the NCAA tournament because it literally won an NCAA championship. Now, and the other shots that we were comparing Suggs to was Jenkins, which won a championship, and then Christian Laettner, which got Duke to the Final Four when they did take down Kentucky in the Elite Eight. So both of those shots ended up, one directly in the moment resulting in a championship, Laettner a few games later resulting in a championship. This shot for Jalen Suggs, as awesome of a moment as it was, and it's probably the one singular play that you're going to remember from this NCAA tournament because it was the only buzzer beater for a win. I wonder in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe 15, 20 years from now, where we're going to remember that shot or how we're going to remember it. And I think it may be Jalen Suggs hit a great shot to put Gonzaga in the championship game, but they didn't seal the deal. They did not find a way to put the cherry on top of the sundae and win their next game. Not to directly compare it to this, but to just give you a little analogy, we all know how important, and this is going to an extreme, we all know how special 1980 was, and when the U.S. beat the Soviets in that Miracle on Ice game, that's always the story that's told. Herb Brooks, though, did tell his team, you'll take this game to your grave, the gold medal game up against Finland, if you end up losing it. Now, the U.S. did not lose it, but you do wonder if they did lose that game. Yes, it was such an important, iconic moment, all that. I wonder how we would have looked back on it 20, 30, you know, however many years later, if it did not end up having the USA win a gold medal. So I'll be curious how we look back at the Suggs shot in a few years from now and eventually decades and decades later. I really do believe it will be one of the great moments, one of the great games, but it did not result in a championship, where Leitner, you could say, it ended up resulting in a championship. Chris Jenkins, that night, that shot literally won them the championship. And it's crazy how that just changes in the span of one game. Now, going into the game last night, I told you I had a feeling that Baylor was going to win. I thought that on Saturday, late Saturday night. I tossed and turned all through Sunday on it. I tossed and turned all before we got on the air on Monday, and I ended up going Baylor 78 to Gonzaga 75. So I did think it was going to be a bitter, disappointing end for Gonzaga. I never would have thought, though, that Baylor would have won this game by 16 points. And basically, not that you ever want to say that the game is over in the first half, and they did end up getting it down to 10 Gonzaga going into intermission. When we were on the air for the final hour of the show, and the game, the ball was thrown up in the air at about 9:20 p.m. Eastern, so we were on for 40 minutes of real time, and we didn't even get to halftime by the time we got off the air. You were seeing a blowout come to fruition, and we were seeing the makings of a blowout with that start that Baylor got off to. And I said in the moment last night, I thought a big takeaway early on that you could see was how many people now today are going to look back. Well, Baylor cruised through the second half of their Final Four game. They were probably already preparing for Gonzaga. They could have done that at halftime because the game was over when it was a 25-point deficit. Gonzaga not only had to grind out a victory, in overtime, there is also something to be said. And Baylor was by far and away the better basketball team last night. There is something, though, to be said when you're in such a great all-time moment. It takes you some time to get off the euphoria and get off the high from that moment. And early on in that game, you did see in the national championship game, Suggs pick up two fouls early, and Gonzaga was never able to find their groove. Even when there was one point in the second half, and I was trying not to get sucked back in here, but there was one point in the second half where it got down to 9. And at 9, you're thinking, okay, if you would have told me this after the first 7 minutes of the game, that it would be 9 with however many minutes to go in the second half, if you're a Gonzaga fan, not the ideal scenario, but you would have signed for it when there was about 10 minutes left in the first half. It got down to 9 at one point in the second half, and then in a snap of a finger, you're going to commercial break, and it's a 16-point advantage for Baylor. That game was over once that got back up to 16, and I really did think if Gonzaga was going to win, I know everyone's talking about Suggs this, Suggs that, off the shot that he did hit on Saturday night, the advantage would have had to been for Gonzaga, Kispert, and then also Timmy. And I said last night, you don't have to totally stop them. You just got to bottle them up for a long stretch. They basically bottled them up for the entire game. If you were a Baylor fan, you would not have believed me if I told you before the game that Timmy and Kispert would have both finished with 12 points. You would have taken that in a second and just hoped that Jalen Suggs didn't go off and have 30, 40 points. And Suggs had 22. He was 8 of 15 from the field. Those two fouls, though, didn't allow him to really establish any momentum in the first half. And Baylor, their guards are just tremendous. Butler was great in the last two games. Mitchell has been great all throughout the year, Teague. And then how about Vital? What he's able to do just having that role with getting 11 rebounds, offensive boards all over the place, the 8 offensive rebounds, that was just a complete dominant one-sided affair. And I was told going into this national championship game, and I believed it too, that this was going to be a heavyweight fight, that this was going to be a fight, that it was going to be a classic final 5 minutes to go, be a one or two possession game, and it was going to come down to which team could execute in the final 5 minutes. Well, the final 5 minutes meant absolutely nothing because Baylor was awesome from wire to wire. And if you look back at what Baylor was able to do up against Houston and then up against Gonzaga in the Final Four and then in the championship game, the Baylor Bears outscored Houston and Gonzaga combined 164 to 129. Just dominating fashion. And going into halftime of both games, more so the Houston game than the Gonzaga game, but really, because it got down to 10, so maybe you think, okay, Gonzaga will have a good second half effort like they did up against BYU. And I don't mean to say this as any sign of disrespect going back to the conference championship game. Baylor isn't BYU. And, you know, I love the BYU program with their coach and Mark Pope, who comes on all the time. So, yes, it was down to 10, but it was, hey, you're lucky to be at 10. And you knew the first few minutes of the second half were going to be huge. And Baylor did answer the bell right out of the gate, as they did all throughout the game. So give credit to Baylor. What Scott Drew is able to do, it is remarkable. If you look back when he took over the program, and it's kind of an understatement when you say the program was in shambles. When you go back to the murder that occurred and then everything that happened with Coach Bliss and all the recruiting violations and you know, covering things up along those lines and lying. And that was a program that no one wanted to touch. And they hired a young coach in Scott Drew that comes from a great basketball family. And he dreamed big. And people have told this story. People have said this before. They thought he was crazy for taking that job. And he's been there since 2003. And not only has he been there since 2003, he has built back up that program, finally gets to a Final Four, and takes home the most important trophy. And has his one shining moment. So that is a testament to Scott Drew. It's a testament to the type of team that he's built. And let's be real, no offense to the folks in Waco, Texas, and I'm actually wearing a Baylor hat today. But Baylor, Waco, Texas, it's not the most ideal place to live, right? And I'm sure Scott Drew throughout the years could have left and did not leave. And now is a national champion. I want to take you back. This was Scott Drew. They played this on the CBS broadcast last night. It was great. This is Scott Drew when he took the job back in 2003. And listen, all these years later, that his dream ended up coming to a reality.
At Baylor University, I did not come to go to the NCAA tournament. We came to win games at the NCAA tournament. We came with a chance to win a national championship at Baylor University. We have the resources. We have the people. We have the leadership. And I think we have the family atmosphere to do it down here. And that's my goal in the next few years, to bring Baylor to that forefront. Now, America does love the little guys. And this is definitely a David versus Goliath situation. And it might take some time. But I can tell you this. Our staff will have the work ethic, the integrity and the commitment to success needed to get this program where it needs to go. And the players I met with today stayed because they wanted you to cheer for them. And together, we're going to build something here. And I can't wait for the ride.
And you think with all the circumstances and you think back, I was reading an article last night when he first took the job to field the team, he had to have open tryouts. And there were some guys that he liked at the tryouts, but they weren't enrolled in the university. It's just wild. And then all these years later, now in 2021, his vision, and they've been building a strong program for years. They've had success, but now you have the ultimate success as the kings of college basketball. So you take it from the Baylor side. You want to just praise the debt that they have. You want to praise the program that they are now. You want to praise, obviously, Scott Drew. And then it's impossible to not think about the Gonzaga side. Because for Gonzaga, you know, when they lost to UNC, all right, they finally got there, right? Mark Few, he finally got to the championship game. Now just getting to the championship game is not good enough. They are no longer a mid-major. They are a powerhouse program. We all know that. You may not want to admit it. Some people that cover the sport from afar still won't say that or think that. When you go into this tournament undefeated, you have to walk out with the national championship trophy. And if they would have lost in a buzzer beater, if they would have lost by 2 or 3 points, maybe it's a little bit of a different tone and a different tune today. The fact that they got blown out, it's unacceptable. They had a great season. It did leave you, though, a game short and a win short. And to have your first loss in the last game of the year, yes, it's impressive, but it's also brutal, and it's a missed opportunity for Gonzaga. And until they win a championship, they could definitely be back. You always trust Mark Few. But until they win a championship, you're going to have a lot of people that are going to think, okay, they can get close. Even if they have another great record like this, people are going to raise an eyebrow and go, we've seen this script before. So one side, elation. The other side, tears and disappointment. But congratulations to the Baylor Bears on winning a championship. 16 past the hour, Zach Gelb show on CBS Sports Radio. Trace doesn't even know this. Well, he knows that Gary Parrish is going to join us at 7. I just got a text from the AD at Baylor, Mac Rhodes. Mac Rhodes is going to join us coming up at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, 5:20 p.m. Pacific. So we will talk to the athletic director, Mac Rhodes, of the Baylor Bears. Check that. The national champion, Baylor Bears, coming up later on in the program, off and running on a very busy Tuesday. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. And when we come on back, Tony Busby did speak today, and an accuser of Deshaun Watson did speak as well. We have some audio. We'll play that for you next. You don't want to miss it.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So we had more information or more details come out today from the whole Deshaun Watson situation, as there's 22 civil lawsuits, and we're going to see if this turns into any criminal charges. Everything's civilly right now, and we'll see if it ends up turning into any criminal charges. You did have one of the victims or one of the alleged victims go to the police. Well, today, Tony Busby, he had a press conference, and I'll say this. There's been some skepticism about Busby with his approach. I thought Busby today had his best, I don't know if moment's the right word, but he really, I thought, did a great job today. But more importantly, they had one of the victims, and actually the first victim to file a lawsuit against Deshaun Watson, Ashley Salas, speak today at this press conference. And then Busby did respond to Rusty Hardin last week when he came out with 18 statements from 18 different masseuses, and they did respond to that. We'll play you all that audio right now. But today, now, I'm not telling you that Deshaun Watson is definitely guilty. I'm not telling you that he's innocent. Today was not a good day for Deshaun Watson, though. If you want to look at the public court of opinion, this is just one person, I would imagine, and deservedly so, that the public court of opinion today did favor the side of Busby and the alleged victims. And the bizarre thing to me about this, you have 22 civil lawsuits, and Busby did say that they did not go through with like 3 or 4 or 5 other people that did contact him. So it's not as if anyone that just goes to Busby, he's taking the case. It's only people that he actually believes and thinks that they could win the case. So you had that come out as well. But then you did hear, and this is the most powerful part, and I give a tremendous amount of credit to Ashley Salas, you know, assuming that she's telling the truth, and you never know with these things, but I have zero reason to not believe her. It was just not a good day for Deshaun Watson. There's no other way about this. And the bizarre part to me, even if you're someone, let's say, that you're skeptical about all 22 civil lawsuits and the number of them, it's tough to see how all 22 women are lying. It really is. And also the decision-making of Deshaun Watson as well. You're a professional athlete. You can't find one or two massage therapists instead of allegedly reaching out to everyone on Instagram and having like 50 people massage you? It just screams as something's going on that's not right. So it's going to be an uphill battle for Deshaun Watson. Right now, it's only a civil matter. If it turns out to be criminal, I don't know when the next time he'll play again. Right now, I don't know the next time when he's going to play again. And I think we're heading to, and who knows what could twist and turn here and what could come out next. I am going to assume that Watson is going to start, and we're still a long ways away from the start of the season. But remember, there's training camp, there's preseason games, hopefully with COVID. We don't know all the details of what the exact schedule will be. And the Texans actually sent a note. Cal McNair sent a note to all season ticket holders addressing the situation. I have a hard time seeing come week one Deshaun Watson on the field. And I said this the other day, I'll say it again. If I had to look at three situations, commissioner's exemplus, playing for the Texans or playing for another team, because remember, Watson doesn't want to be there anymore in Houston, I would once again put it in the order of one, the exemplus, two, playing for the Texans, or three, playing for someone else, because I don't see how you could trade for him right now. You know, regardless if you don't want to have an opinion on this, and it's kind of tough to have an opinion right now because you never know. No matter if you want to say he did this or not, right now I think it's pretty obvious that it's tough to see him getting this resolved and also getting him on the field come week one. So the NFL is going to have a decision to make probably sooner rather than later because we're not that far away from training camp and OTAs and who knows what the exact schedule is going to be. More importantly, though, instead of talking about if Deshaun Watson is going to play football or not, let's hear from the first woman, the first massage therapist to actually file a civil lawsuit against Deshaun Watson and come out publicly today. Ashley Salas says that Deshaun Watson harassed her while giving him a massage.
I am a survivor of assault and harassment. Deshaun Watson is my assaulter and my harasser. Deshaun Watson assaulted and harassed me on March 30th, 2020, in my own home, doing what I love most, massage therapy.
And let's also hear Ashley Salas say the incident with Watson has caused her to feel a range of emotions.
This incident has impacted me in many ways, and those ways are hard to describe. I feel a range of emotions, guilt, embarrassment, shame, courage, anger, sadness, and numbness. Some days I feel like a hero. Other days I feel like a failure.
And Salas goes on to say performing massages after the incident with Watson occurred has been very difficult.
I can no longer practice the profession that I love the most without shaking during the session. My hands shake whenever I place them on a client, and I've had to cut the session short. If you only knew how heartbreaking that is to me. I got into massage therapy to heal people, to heal their minds and bodies, to bring peace to their souls. Deshaun Watson has robbed me of that.
And if you think about it, when she says that, I thought that was very powerful because she got into this business to help people and heal people, and allegedly she ended up getting hurt the most because of the alleged assault that did occur with Deshaun Watson. And you got to think about when something like that happens to you, you don't know how people react. It's clearly a traumatic experience. And when you look at it, when you have to keep that bottled up inside for so long and you're just given a massage trying to do your job to another client and you start to get flashbacks and shake, like she said, man. It's really some powerful audio. We'll play a few more from Ashley Salas. She says that she had to seek counseling since the incident occurred because of all the trauma.
I suffer from panic attacks, anxiety, and depression. I'm in counseling as a result of Deshaun Watson's actions. I hope he knows how much pain he's inflicted on me emotionally and physically. And I hope he knows how much pain he's inflicted on these other survivors.
And here's another thing before we get to the next audio clip. So when this story first came out, it was a very loud approach by Busby, who I thought did a great job today, but it was a very loud approach by Busby. And we have this perception and image of Deshaun Watson as not only this great football player, but we have never heard a single thing about Deshaun Watson doing any wrong off the field. Like, we were talking about, and we were killing the Texans, How did they ruin this relationship before anyone knew about any of this? And who knows what the Texans knew or did not know. But this seemed like the ideal franchise quarterback, right? And we had conversations. Maybe the only other quarterback that you'd rather have for the next 10, 15 years is Patrick Mahomes. And look where we're at today with a lot of uncertainty. So Ashley Salas, she did bring that up because I think at first a lot of people were like, a little skeptical. You have a loud lawyer who's saying there's going to be like 20 women that are going to come out here. Who knows what to believe? And then day by day, at least I could say this, I'm starting to believe more of the accusers than kind of sitting back and saying, oh, Deshaun Watson, he did nothing wrong here. And I think that's something, and once again, I'm not telling you Deshaun Watson's definitely guilty. We'll see how this plays out. We'll see what ends up happening. If it ends up turning into any criminal charges, I just don't have a good feeling about this for Deshaun Watson. And Ashley Salas, she did say that don't be fooled by Deshaun Watson's good guy persona.
My father, who was once a diehard Texans fan, can no longer mention his name without turning red, seething with disappointment. I think that that's the most heartbreaking aspect of it all. We were all deceived into thinking Deshaun Watson was a good guy. And unfortunately, we know that good guys can do terrible things.
And one more, Ashley Salas says she made her story public today to put an end or to try to put an end to Watson's actions.
People say that I'm doing this just for money. That is false. I come forward now so that Deshaun Watson does not assault another woman. And I come forward now in the hopes that no other human being will assault another in the future. I want to prevent this type of conduct. I come forward now to bring change in our society. I am seeking justice, not just on behalf of myself, but for all survivors.
So powerful stuff. It was very emotional. Now, Ashley Salas, she did sit up there. They had a few other people speak as well. And you could tell her sharing her story over 5-6 minutes. It just took so much out of her. And who could blame her if what she is saying did actually occur? And you could, like, there were so many points where I was just watching her when other people were speaking and I was just listening to what other people were saying. And she couldn't look up because you could tell how distraught she is from what supposedly did happen to her. So if this did happen, I commend her for obviously speaking publicly. And this is something that it's going to, I don't know how this is going to end, but I have a tough time believing that all 22 women are lying. I just really do, if we're going to be blunt and truthful about this. I'm not going to sit here and tell you who's right, who's wrong, who's lying, who's not. It just does not sit right with me when you're a professional athlete and you're having 50 massage therapists and it's supposedly such a random process. Now, let me just give you the other side. Rusty Harden did come out with a statement about an hour ago, and he did talk about how Ashley Salas and her team asked for $100,000 a little while back. So that's something else. Now, I guess they gave the Watson camp an opportunity to settle. Even if Watson thought he did nothing wrong, I wonder if each and every person of the 22 civil lawsuits gave an opportunity to settle. And you kind of, I don't know if you want to look at it this way, because if Watson really thinks he did nothing wrong, then I could see why he wants to fight this. But if he had any doubt or if he knew that he was wrong in any way, and you see some apologies that he sent or things that we read when some of this stuff first came out, wouldn't you settle to just avoid all this becoming public? So let's get Tony Busby. He's the attorney that's representing the 22 accusers here in the civil lawsuit. Busby revealed that Deshaun Watson would tell massage therapists actually what to wear for some of them when they would end up massaging Deshaun Watson.
He repeatedly insists that the woman be alone, citing privacy concerns. And in some cases, he even dictates that what he wants the particular woman to wear. In some cases, he takes pictures of the particular woman from Instagram and sends it to her and says, wear something like this because it's hot today, or it's hot in Houston.
And then finally, I think this was actually from what Busby said. This was probably, I thought, the most damaging clip from Busby. You know, not talking about Ashley Salas, but I thought this was the most damaging clip to Watson from Tony Busby. Remember, take you back to last week when Rusty Harden came out with 18 massage therapists who have worked on Deshaun Watson and spoke on Deshaun Watson's behalf. Busby responded to those allegations and actually reference a DM that did contradict or painted two different stories from what one of the people defending Deshaun Watson said publicly to what they actually then revealed privately. Here's about this minute clip. Listen up.
One of these individuals that was released said, I've been providing massage therapy to Deshaun in 2018 and massaged him at least 40 times since then. I've never had a single uncomfortable or inappropriate experience with Deshaun. That was the statement that was released. But let me read to you the direct message that this individual sent that we now have a copy of. I told you I stopped working with him. Yeah, why? Because I was hearing too much stuff about him messing with other people. Like other therapists and estheticians, he's been doing a lot the last 3 or 4 months. I even told his ass he needed to be careful because his name getting around. I just hope don't nobody call me to question me. That's two different stories. Now, am I suggesting that the 18 women had bad experiences? I don't know. Am I suggesting there's a reason they come forward? I don't know. That's the questions for you to ask. But what I do know is that what was said publicly by this one individual and what is said privately were two completely different things.
And he's right on that. If that is true, if those messages are true and they've been validated, and I'm assuming that with him sharing them today, they are true. That is odd when one of the 18 people defending Deshaun Watson, when one of them says he's great, never had, or she said great, never had an incident. And then there's a message where she's warning someone else from what she's heard about Deshaun Watson. So it makes you think maybe some of those 18 people that have defended Deshaun Watson could be getting paid for their statements. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll break. Just wanted to play all that audio for you. Some very important stuff today, and obviously a lot of emotional sound. We'll come on back when we do return. We're going to go to the NBA. One Nets star is coming back, but the other one is going to be out for a while. Here we go again. Can the Nets still win a championship with all these injuries? We'll talk about it when we come on back.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Well, Kyrie Irving's back, and the Nets need him. That's for sure. Because for a while, you had Kyrie in and out of lineup. Then you had Kevin Durant out for a while. James Harden has been the MVP of the Nets, and now James Harden's going to be out at least 10 days with a hamstring injury. He'll be reevaluated, so probably more than that. So he'll be out for at least 10 days, but the Nets do get some good news. They are expected to see the triumphant return for one Kevin Durant, as Kevin Durant's going to be making his way back into the lineup expected tomorrow up against the Pelicans. So you get some good news, you get some bad news with the Brooklyn Nets. If this was a normal year, I would say press the panic button, right? Because the playoffs then would be starting in about 2-3 weeks. Or even starting next week. With the schedule being shorter and then the season starting later because of what happened with the restart last year and then going to the bubble and all that and the season ending when it did, the playoffs don't really start for a little bit over a month now. Like a month and a week, a month and 2 weeks. You just got to get healthy if you're the Brooklyn Nets. And even if you aren't healthy, like let's just say if this James Harden thing is lingering and at least you get Kyrie and you get Kevin Durant, look at what the Nets have been able to do on some nights with just James Harden or on other nights or most nights, just James Harden and Kyrie Irving. Right now they have the best record in the Eastern Conference. So this is a three-team race in the Eastern Conference. If the Nets just have two out of their three superstars, I would still put them in the finals over the Bucks and the Sixers. However, there's at least a little bit more of a conversation to be had. If they have all three and all three are healthy and all three are in the right mental state and not fighting with Michael Rapoport on Twitter and Kyrie making sure that there's no birthdays coming up in the postseason that he has to go walk away and celebrate with his family, then the Nets should be A-okay and the Nets should be fine. I am not that concerned about this trio only playing 7 games together so far. Get to the postseason. You'll have a tune-up in the first round, whether you're going up against the Knicks or whoever is going to be that eighth seed, because remember, it's a little bit weird this year because the play-in, or maybe they're going up against the 7, maybe they're going up against the 6 to see where they fall. They're either going to be playing the 6, 7, or 8 because they're going to be the 1, 2, or 3 seed. And this team, I'm not worried about them. I still think they're going to the finals. It's just a little bit disappointing because as a basketball fan, you want to see all these three guys together in the lineup once that the Nets did make that trade to go acquire James Harden. And I think that a big thing here, if this was Harden who was out for the time that Durant missed, I would be concerned. But Durant being out allowed Harden and Kyrie to mesh and gel. And Harden has showed us, and we said this like 9,000 times already, he is willing to sacrifice and cater to Kyrie's demands. Because James Harden, with the clout that he has, being an MVP, he could have said, yeah, even though I wanted to come here, Kyrie, I don't care if you want me to play point guard. I'm not doing that. He was willing to play point guard. His assists have been great this year. And you're seeing a really conscientious effort by James Harden to play nice with Kyrie. I was never concerned about KD and Harden meshing. I was never concerned about KD and Kyrie meshing. It was all about that dynamic, that relationship between Harden and between Kyrie. So putting Durant back into the system now, that's good. Unfortunately, you lose Harden. Harden has already showed me enough, though, that he could play nice with Kyrie, so I'm not concerned about the Kevin Durant dynamic to this. I was watching, though. I wasn't watching it live, but I saw it on Twitter. Michael Rapoport, he is so obnoxious. He is so unlikable. Now, I think Rapoport and Kevin Durant are both in the wrong with the whole social media exchange. If you're Michael Rapoport, I know why you're doing it. It's because your name was dragged in the mud, and your name is getting destroyed and torched by Barstool, deservedly so, that you actually tried to file a lawsuit against them over a t-shirt and if they had a herpes on your face or not. Seriously, like, that's what we're talking about here. And that's defamation or whatever, and the lawsuit got thrown out. So you got embarrassed on your power play because your hubris was leading to your downfall. And you said to yourself, okay, now I'll just release the message and everyone will divert from what happened with Smitty and with Portnoy at Barstool. Well, you kind of look like a rat here. And Durant should have never messaged Michael Rapoport. He's thin-skinned, we know that. Why are you messaging, though, Michael Rapoport? Who cares? Who gives a rat's ass about Michael Rapoport? Like, if I'm Kevin Durant, the last thing I'm worrying about is Michael Rapoport lambasting me over an interview I did when I barely spoke to Charles Barkley. But that's Durant, though. He's sensitive. Now, Rapoport is going on this PR tour, and he's going on this sob tour. Oh, look at me. And Michael Rapoport did talk about, it was in a jovial way, but since Rapoport is really not funny anymore, it was actually like, oh, is he being serious? And later in the interview, he revealed that he was joking. But here is the humor of Michael Rapoport talking about some of his, if you want to say humor, you put it up in air quotes like I just did, talking about some of his public encounters since revealing the Kevin Durant direct messages and getting KD fined a bunch of money. Well, not a bunch of money for Kevin Durant, but you know what I'm saying.
It's been crazy. It's been tough. You know, the last few days have been tough, have been crazy. I've gone out of the house and I get, you know, sneers and I get finger pointing and I don't do good with sneers and snickers. And then I actually went to the dog park with my dog, and people that usually, you know, say hello and even play with my dog, they don't want to play with my dog Wheezy. And then, you know, I went to my coffee shop and they said, not today, Cupcake. And it's weird. It's like,
funny.
Why are you calling me Cupcake? And then I get online.
Small violin.
And social media. And, you know, I know I put it out there, but, you know, people online have been so cruel and mean. And I have to say about the people on social media that I don't know, I could give a crap about the people on social media.
Oh, real tough guy right there. Real tough guy. Now, Skip and Shannon, or at least Skip, he didn't pick up that was a joke because later he followed up about the dog and the encounters at the coffee shop. And he goes, oh, I was just joking. What people would do for publicity. And it's not even funny. Did you laugh seriously at that? Did you laugh at all during any of that, Trace?
I'm with Skip. I thought that was real.
You did?
I didn't think he was joking.
Oh, jeez.
He started to, at one point,
You could give him an Oscar for this?
No, it was just, get
so
it.
It's so pathetic if on Rapoport's part.
I don't understand where the humor is supposed to be.
He's trying to be funny. He's no longer funny. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
I give credit to Shannon, though. He said, well, why would you even release the messages? Now, he goes, oh, it was like a tough time, blah, blah, blah. He did it because he's a coward, because he was annoyed that his name was getting dragged in the mud, so he had to try to take someone else down. Ugh, Rapoport. I'm not defending KD, because I don't get why KD would even involve himself with Rapoport, but he does this with everybody. Rapoport, though, is such a loser. So let's play one more. Here's Michael Rapoport on Fox, who says, Kevin Durant crossed the line with his Instagram DMs. It's courtesy of Undisputed.
But when you say you're going to spit on me, and you can't wait to spit on me, and let's meet up on this street and that street because you're going to spit in my face And that was the first time. And then there was a second time when I see you, I'm going to spit in your face. And then last Tuesday in the morning, while I was at work on Atypical, I was dealing with a lot of moving. There's a lawsuit situation that I'm dealing with.
He can't even talk when and
he hit me out of the blue. I can't wait to see your dirty butt. When I see you, I'm going to spit in your face. And I'm like, and then he kept going on, and then he brought up my wife. And at that moment, it wasn't Durant. At that moment, it wasn't a basketball player. It was just another dude
to divert attention
in my
away from
DMs. And I was like,
that's what it was.
Yo,
stop.
This ain't cool. We're not friends. There's no bro code.
Get the small violin.
I don't know you like
clown.
That. That's not banter. That's not funny. That's not like me, you know, saying, yo, look at Shannon's suit today that he's wearing on the
Another
show.
Joke that
you know,
missed.
Why are you wearing those colors? They don't match. Or Skip, you're crazy.
Another joke that
shot
didn't
wasn't
hit.
As big, the greatest shot ever. That's none of that stuff. That's not, you're sensitive.
Oh,
that's nothing.
Geez.
And I put it out there. Did I think it would turn into this whole thing? Absolutely
yes,
not.
You did.
Do
it's
I wish
Kevin
I had
Durant.
Never done it? 100%.
Oh, geez, he's insufferable. The irony there. Guy that likes to talk a lot of crap. He could dish it, but he can't take it. And going back to that first clip that we thought was a joke and that he tried to play off as a joke, then he gets all serious on us in that next clip. Whew, he comes off as a sensitive baby here. Man, Durant Rappaport. I think I'm done talking about both of them during this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.